Good morning. How are you today? Good, good, good. Good to hear it. So I want to start the sermon with a little story, but it needs a disclaimer. And, you know, I paused a little bit before I decided to use this because I thought if you have to start with a disclaimer, is that really the best way to start? But the disclaimer is I have never slugged anyone in my entire life, okay? Just remember that. So recently, I was sharing some text messages with my two older sisters. I'm the middle child of five. I have two older sisters. And one of my older sisters has some health issues and has had real struggles in life, more than anyone should have. And she was on a trip with a quote-unquote friend of hers who decided to tell her all the things that were wrong with her. And I heard about this through my other sister texting me the story, and I responded back to my other sister with, "Oh, I want to slug her, that friend," right? Even though I had never slugged anybody, that's the feeling that welled up inside of me. That's the anger I felt. That's the emotion I felt in wanting to go defend my sister, who I know has endured a lot of hardship in life. Okay, so now for Revelation 21, 1 through 6. Let's listen to our scripture today. "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'See, the home of God is among mortals. God will dwell with them, and they will be God's people. And God will be with them and be their God. God will wipe every tear from their eyes. Death will be no more. Mourning and crying and pain will be no more, for the first things have passed away.' And the one who was seated on the throne said, 'See, I am making all things new.' Also he said, 'Write this, for these words are trustworthy and true.' Then he said to me, 'It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty, I will give water as a gift from the spring of the water of life.'" It never fails when I hear this text or read this text that I don't think about my grandparents who were farmers in rural southern Missouri. I think about the hard work that they endured. I think about the poverty that they experienced, especially during the Depression. And I think about the seemingly endless amount of love that they had to share. Every time I read this text, I think of them, and it stirs some very, very strong emotions in me. Viscerally, I react to it, and I think about them, and I think about no more crying and no more pain. I imagine them being surrounded by the love that they so freely gave. And so this passage has long been a favorite of mine because of the deep emotions that it stirs within me and the connections it restores in me. And I think it stirs deep emotions because it was written from a place of deep emotions. When John was writing this text, roughly in the years somewhere 90 to 95 in our common era, he was writing from a place of pain and sorrow and emotion, because around the year 70 and surrounding it, Jerusalem was sacked by the Romans. They were conquered. They were dispersed. The people as a people were no more the way they had been. And John is feeling that pain. He has seen people lose their homes. He's seen people lose their lives. He's seen people cry in agony. He has seen grief and sorrow and hardship on a scale that maybe many of us never will. And so he is writing at a time where he is trying to conjure up some hope that there will be a new way, a new place, and no more of the suffering. So this text may stir emotions, strong emotions, because it was written from a place of strong emotions. And then there's a similar text, actually, in our Psalms. Psalm 137. You've all heard the Jimmy Cliff song, "By the Rivers of Babylon. There we wept as we remembered Zion." It was from yet another time of exile and being conquered when Jerusalem was sacked and the people were carried away into Babylon. And it's not a coincidence that we feel some of the same emotions and maybe even hear some of the same words in Revelation and in that Psalm 137, because John was very aware of the Babylonian exile. And in Babylon, Revelation is not the good guys. They're not. So this is a long history that is rooted in the community of John's time. So from Psalm 137, let me just read a little more of that. "By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down, and there we wept when we remembered Zion. On the willows, there we hung our harps, for there our captors ask us for a song, and our tormentors ask for mirth, saying, 'Sing us one of the songs of Zion.' How could we sing the Lord's song in a foreign land? If you forget, O Jerusalem, let my right hand wither." The people were in a tough place. And I wonder what we would do in that same place. Maybe have feelings of wanting to slug somebody? Well, I think they did. I think the writer of Psalm 137 and I think the writer of Revelation had those feelings, because listen to the last couple of verses of Psalm 137. "Oh, daughter Babylon, you devastator, happy shall they be who pay you back what you have done to us. Happy shall they be who take your little ones and dash their heads against the rock." Whoa, that's not in the Jimmy Cliff song. But it's there. It's there in our text. And when I read Revelation verses 1 through 6, I stopped, because that's where the lectionary stops. But as I was preparing this week, I kept reading. Here's verses 7 and 8. "Those who conquer will inherit these things, and I will be their God, and they will be my children. But as for the cowardly, the faithless, the polluted, the murderers, the sexually immoral, the sorcerers, the idolaters, all liars, their place shall be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur, which is a second death." Well, what happened to the new heaven and the new earth and the new Jerusalem and the no more tears and the no more crying? There are more to these texts than just the simple, "I feel good about my grandparents" memory, right? There's more to these texts than a catchy tune from Jimmy Cliff. There's more to these texts than just the vision of what's better. What's part of these stories, what's part of our text, is our humanity and our depth of emotions, our depth of responses, the call sometimes that we feel to revenge and retribution and bitterness. And what do we do with that? Well, I think we own it. I think we say, yeah, I'm a human being, and I do feel these things. But what I'm going to do, instead of react on those things, is acknowledge that they're there, and I'm going to have a vision that is better. I'm going to dream a dream. I'm going to aspire to some higher calling. I'm going to see in my mind's eye what God has called us to be. I'm going to see a place where we comfort one another. I'm going to see a place where there's no more tears. I'm going to see a place where we're not in pain. I'm going to see a place where we stop conquering one another and hurting our children. I'm going to see a place where God lives among mortals. And the Greek in the text there says, basically, God pitches a tent and lives among the mortals, lives among us. And we're kind of in a tent, aren't we, almost? God is living with us in the midst of all of who we are. You think God doesn't know we feel these things? You think God doesn't know that this is the way we want to respond sometimes? But I believe it is also God who gives us the visions that there is more to our story. Verse 6 says, "It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end." So I thought, well, why don't I look back at the beginning? Genesis 1:1. When God began to create the heavens and the earth was complete chaos, and darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind from God swept over the face of the waters. When God began creating, there was nothing but chaos. And I'm going to tell you, well, let me just say, a lot of our world feels pretty chaotic to me. But when I take this text from Revelation, I am the beginning and the end, and I look back at the beginning, and I see that God can create the entire universe from chaos. It kind of feeds my soul a little bit and helps me rest a little bit. That, yeah, there's work to be done, but it's not all up to me. I'm working with the Creator of the entire universe. We are working with the Creator of the entire universe. When we get overwhelmed by this world, the state of our state, or our personal troubles, our faith has words to nurture the dreams of where we want to go and who we want to be, and to help us through those times. Our faith stories include those struggles. They include our desire for violence and retribution. They include dreams that overwhelm us with their beauty. And they include words that inspire us to hope for more. Our faith stories remind us, yes, that God creates in chaos, and God comes to be present in the midst of despair and devastation, and that God will pitch a tent with us, not only in the hard times, but then also to celebrate with us. Our faith stories remind us that the care of the world is indeed our calling, but we are not alone in fulfilling it. The very last part of verse 6 said, "To the thirsty I will give water as a gift from the spring of the water of life." Whew, I'm thirsty. Are you thirsty with me? Are you thirsty for some peace? Are you thirsty for some justice? Are you thirsty for community? Are you thirsty for truth? Are you thirsty for love? And are you thirsty for hope? Are you thirsty for that vision of the New Jerusalem where there is no more tears and crying and pain and sorrow and grief? Are you thirsty with me? Well, let us drink from the water of life because it is good. It is good. So may we keep pursuing the calling that is ours. Keep the faith. Keep dreaming. Keep believing in justice. Keep believing in love. Keep believing in beauty. Keep believing that we can be more than just the worst of our emotions. Keep believing and keep dreaming. Amen.